It's been a while since I've had the joy of interviewing Paul O'Sullivan, and it always is a joy. Paul, crumbs, we've been through some very interesting stories over the past years. Cyril Ramaphosa's dollars in his couch that you investigated. More recently, the Mike Lomas story. Today, this Mantengu issue. Wow. There's a heck of a lot more than meets the eye there. So, Paul, I just want to go back a little bit, because today you are really presenting, if you like, the other side to Mike Miller and Mantengu. When I first met you, I don't know if you remember this, but you came to my offices at Melrose Arch. So it would have been MoneyWeb Day, so more than 12 years ago. And you were having a fight at the time.
14 or 15 years ago.
14, 15 years ago. You were having a fight at the time with a guy called Zenaid Motti. And he was threatening to kill you. And it was so bad that you said you couldn't.
I don't think he was threatening to kill me.
Well, I remember you saying, we can't preview the fact that you're there because people want to bump you off, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, things have changed a lot.
It's nothing to do with the Motti matter. That was because of the fact that at the time I had exposed Jackie Celebi. And Jackie Celebi was going on trial. And Jackie Celebi had hired people to bump me off. So It had nothing whatsoever to do with Motti.
You live a dangerous life, so you've got lots of enemies. So let's just park it on that side. But Motti is a guy who, at the time, you were crossing swords with, but you appear to have a different view of him now. Just help us through that process.
Well, at the time, Motti was sitting in a car with another person, and we had identified that the sons of that other person had been involved in shooting up a car belonging to what at that stage was a client of ours. We later ditched that client because we found that the client himself had been involved in some criminal activity involving movement of drugs. So we parted ways with that client. But in the meantime, we had, during the course of the investigation into the shots that were fired at the vehicle that client was driving in, we'd identified some of the individuals behind it. And the father of the two boys that were involved in that incident was sitting in a car with Zenaid Motti. So we added Motti to the list of possible suspects. And in fact, he was arrested. But he subsequently made representation to the DPP and explained that actually, you know, he had no knowledge of what was going on, and he just happened to be in the car with that father of that person, and the father of the person hadn't confided in him that his sons were busy trying to scare somebody. It was an extortion attempt, and that they were busy trying to scare somebody. So processes being what they are, after one or two years, the state dropped their charges against Motti. And I ran into Motti then on another matter, not an investigation that we were doing, but an investment I'd made into a company called Old Fashioned Fish and Chips. And I'd lent them a large sum of money, and to secure my loan, I'd taken a cession over the shares of the company by the shareholders. And then they didn't meet the terms of repayment of the loan, which is quite a few million rand. So when they then decided they wanted to sell their business or a share of their business, and they were selling a share of their business to Motti. And Motti phoned me and said, listen, if you don't want me to buy into the business, I won't. And I said, look, I'm not interested whether you buy into it or not, but I'm not releasing the shares because that's the security for my loan. And then he made arrangements to buy shares in that business, but instead of paying them directly, he refunded my loan so that the shares could be released to him. And then I washed my hands of the fish and chip business. And later, he approached me to carry out an investigation in relation to the theft of a diamond, which had been stored in a safety deposit box in Switzerland, a very valuable diamond. And the diamond had been stolen by what we later discovered to be a member of the Russian mafia. So we carried out an investigation into that. And the member of the Russian mafia had also been to, I think it was the Lebanon, where he'd opened a fake criminal charge against Motti and his father, alleging that Motti and his father had robbed him in the Lebanon. And I carried out an investigation there, and I found that the neither Motti or his father had ever been in the Lebanon at all. So the whole thing was a complete setup. And over the years, not directly for Motti, but, you know, he runs quite a big conglomerate of various companies involved in various trading activities or mining and logistics and so on. And from time to time, as in most businesses, there would be criminals involved in conduct against those companies. And we carry out those investigations for the various companies. And at the moment, we're carrying out investigations for a company called Massetti Holdings, which is part of the Motti group of companies. So a lot of people say to me, oh, but were you working for a crook? Well, I've made it clear to Motti and to the people that around him that if I ever find any evidence of any criminal activity by either Motti or the people working for him, unless the criminal activity is against the Motti group, but if I find any evidence of them engaged in organized crime or any other form of money laundering or whatever, I will drop them as a client immediately. But like any other company that's involved in activities, business activities, if they become a victim of crime, they're entitled to call for our services. And many companies do. So we render services to a wide range of clients. And sometimes the people that come to us for services, we had one recently where they came to us for services, and I think 6 or 8 weeks into the project, we realized that, hey, this guy was playing a game and that he himself was involved in the criminal activity, and he was looking for us to try and expose another party that was involved in the same criminal activity. And we closed the project down and we told him in no uncertain terms, we're not prepared to work for you because we can't work both sides of the fence.
You have a very interesting life. We had those conversations over the late Hannes Stradom as well, but something very similar. So I suppose it's the work you do, Paul. You get approached by various people. But to the point of our conversation today, I spoke with Mike Miller from Mantengu a little while ago, and Mantengu being a listed company, and he made some pretty hectic allegations against the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, against Motti in particular, and against a former employee of his. He even got an Anton Piller, which is a very serious execution order from the criminal or from the courts to be able to go into someone's house and go and grab documentation from them. And I guess people would say, well, just the rational observer would say, if you can get an Anton Piller in the first place, there's got to be some kind of probable cause. And then secondly, Zunaid Motti's reputation precedes him. So if he's involved in some way, I guess one can build on that. But your investigations, given that you are representing the Motti group in this conversation, have shown you something very different. Take us through the story as you see it.
We start, obviously, we've got a copy of all the pleadings in this matter. We obtained them before we were able to properly investigate. And I need to mention at this stage that up until a few weeks ago, there was no mention of either Motti or any of his companies in the Motti group involved in this game, shall we say, that Mantangu Minor are playing. Now, we've analyzed the ex parte application, and I'm fairly certain, of course, you know, we don't act for any of the parties involved in the ex parte application, but the reason we've analyzed it is because it flowed from that Mantangu have made these allegations of share price manipulation. And they've pointed fingers at a number of individuals, including a chap by the name of Ulrich Bester. They subsequently, by the way, not just Ulrich Bester, they alleged that certain members or officers, if you like, of the JSE were involved in either assisting in the share price manipulation or covering it up by refusing to investigate the matter. Now, we looked into that possibility, and with the information that's publicly available, we satisfied ourselves that there were no members or officers of the JSE that were involved in assisting Ulrich Bester to carry out any share price manipulation. Additionally, I interviewed Ulrich Bester myself. And being an expert on body language and looking people in the eyes and asking them pointed questions, I satisfied myself that Ulrich Bester is also not engaged in any share price manipulation. But more than that, I analyzed the application itself. This is the application that was brought on an ex parte basis before the High Court. Now, it's a fact of life that if you go to the High Court with an ex parte application, you are making that application without the other side of the coin having the benefit of what we call the auri alteram partem principle. In other words, they're not able to defend themselves. So you have to convince the court, without the other side having any say in the matter, that you have a strong enough case against the person that you're requesting that Anton Piller. And what is an Anton Piller? An Anton Piller is effectively a civil search warrant. It's administered by the sheriff of the court and an attorney who is supposed to be independent, and for the most part they are, and they're called supervising attorneys. And they have to be selected at random, and they have to generate the belief that their conduct is independent of the company that's brought the application. And then the sheriff of the court goes there, and what they normally do, depending on the circumstances, is they would sometimes have police officials available just for the sake of keeping the peace in case the individual that's being searched or having his... And normally what they do is they seize telephones, laptop computers, and so on and so forth. And then they're sealed and placed in the care of the sheriff of the court. And sometimes what happens is instead of sealing the items themselves, they're backed up and a shadow copy is made of the hard drive. And that is then sealed and placed in the care of the sheriff of the court. And the originals are given back to the person who's being searched. And that process normally takes anything, depending on the size of the machines and whatnot, can take up to 4 or 6 hours because there's a electronic process to be followed. Now, when you apply for these orders, you have to acknowledge to the court that you are being forthright and honest and ethical in everything that you're saying to the court. And I think that is the weakness that Mantangu have, because they brought an application to the court and they made certain comments. And when they made these comments, they knew that what they were saying to the court wasn't strictly true, which means they haven't taken the court into their confidence. Now, if you tell a court that the conduct of this share price manipulation is intended to affect a transaction that you have going on at that moment in time. And in this particular case, they're talking about the transaction they had with the purchase of a mine called Blue Ridge. And they made it clear in that High Court application that, in fact, the conduct of the share price manipulator, which they said was Ulrich Bester, was intended to disrupt their purchase of the Blue Ridge mine by changing the nature of the investment, because the reduced share price of Mantengo would have changed it to what's called a Category 1, which would have resulted in them having to call a special general meeting of the shareholders because of the purchase price of the mine. But the reality is they knew at all material times that, in fact, they were buying that mine for a token price of 100 rand. Now, you don't have to call a special general meeting if you're going to buy a mine for 100 rand. And therefore, they kept quiet about that in their High Court application. Now, if you keep quiet about something in a High Court application, it can be classed as fraud by non-disclosure. In other words, you've held out to the court that we need this to protect our interests, but we don't explain to the court that actually we're not being quite honest about our interests, because we knew at that time that we were buying the mine for 100 rand. Now, they cannot now turn around and say that they didn't know they were buying the mine, Blue Ridge. And I've got the documents here. When you look at it, they say here in their application, I can just call you the paragraph numbers, the applicant's share price is therefore of cardinal importance. Then they go to say the applicant has reported the incidences of share price manipulation to both the JSC, and they carry on. And they say that the seller plans to provide, this is the seller of Blue Ridge Mine, they say the seller plans to provide the final approval for the transaction on the 24th of June, 2024. Now, bearing in mind that this sworn statement was deposed to on the 18th of June, 2024, it means that they knew at all material times that they were buying that mine for 100 rand, because it would have been impossible for them to be able to state that the final approval is due in 6 days' time, bearing in mind that we had a weekend between those days. So we had actually 4 working days. So they knew, but then they go on paragraph 30. They say, as already stated, this does not make any commercial sense, as nobody would want to sell shares at 1.51 rand at a discount when the share was trading at 1.71 rand throughout the day. This is what they said to the court. This proves that someone is trying to artificially lower the share price to force the acquisition, they're talking about the acquisition of Blue Ridge, into a Category 1 transaction as described above. But then they go on to say,
yeah, Paul, I think you've made the point very strongly, and let's just move on, because we can get into details and it can lose us. But from what I understand, they then pulled Zunaid Morty into this whole arrangement. And how did that happen? I have read through the legal papers, and I think it's an interesting story of why Zunaid Morty was pulled in.
I sent you the document, Alec, because I wanted you to be au fait with it before we had a discussion. The reality of the situation is that on the day they carried out the execution of the Anton Piller order that was granted in June 2024, on the day in question, Morty was sitting somewhere, I don't know where, having lunch with a chap by the name of Danny McGowan. Now, Danny McGowan is the majority shareholder of Liberty Coal, which has a very large coal mine, used to be called the Optimum Mine. He bought it out from the liquidators. And he's an overseas businessman. He's not South African. He's from the UK. And he bought this mine out from the liquidators and settled, I think, I can't remember the figure now, but it was certainly in the region of a billion rand or more. And
sorry, Paul, to bring people up to date, the Optimum mine was the Gupta stole the mine effectively from Glencore. It's been well documented, the whole thing. So after the Guptas were kicked out, presumably it became available, and then he bought that. So it's a sizable operation, but it has got a very strange past.
It's got a very clouded history, but it's still a good
mine.
A very good mine. It covers a vast area and is producing very good quality coal. So McGowan bought this mine and obviously he wants a good team of people to run it. So for Liberty Coal, he hired a chap by the name of Ulrich Bester as one of his executives. Now that means that Ulrich Bester is also, by the way, a shareholder through another company that Bester owns, is also a shareholder of Mantengo. So Ulrich Bester...
Because he was at Mantengo previously, is that correct?
He
worked at Mantengo.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Mm-hmm. He'd left there and he'd gone to work for Liberty Coal. So now he's got this... Anton Piller executed at his house, at his home. And McGowan is sitting having lunch with Motti, and McGowan's phone rings and it's Bester. And Bester tells him that the sheriff of the court is here and they're seizing the computers, my laptop computer, which happens to be his work laptop computer at Liberty Coal. So McGowan's saying, you know, what's Liberty Coal getting dragged into this for? So McGowan then explains to Motti what's going on. And both Motti and McGowan are friends, and they're involved in various other businesses outside of South Africa that have nothing to do with either Liberty Coal or with Mantengo Mining. And Motti himself had never even heard of Mantengo Mining until that day. So McGowan then mentions the name of the chief operating officer or director at Mantengo. And Motti says, well, hang on a minute, that chap used to work for my mining division. I'll give him a ring. So he gives him a ring and he says, listen, why can't we all get together and have a discussion about this and see if the matter is capable of being settled? And Motti's only interest at that stage was for McGowan to get back his company laptop and with all the information on that laptop, which related to Liberty Coal. Now, Motti has no interest in Liberty Coal and has no shares in it. He has no dealings in it whatsoever, but his mate owns or is a majority shareholder of Liberty Coal, and he's now worried that the trading deals that he's doing on coal are on this laptop and are going to be seen by another mining company. So he wants the information back. So they have a meeting, and the meeting, it's decided, should take place at Motti's office. So they go through to Motti's office and they have the meeting there. And during the meeting, Motti, being the type of person he is listening to all this talk about the share price manipulation of Mantengo and what. And Motti says, well, anybody can manipulate your share price. I can play with it now and get it down to 10 cents if I want. But then Miller turns around and says, well, yeah, I could even get it down to 1 cent if I want. So they were joking. But now, earlier this year, I think in March or February or March of this year, Miller now opens a criminal docket or purports to open a criminal docket. But he hasn't actually opened a criminal docket. He's made an affidavit in which he alleges that these crimes were taking place. And he names the people that he finds to be involved in committing those crimes. And he starts off with Bester. He includes the CEO of the JSE and other officers of the JSE. And then he labels McGowan and Motti as possible suspects as well. And the whole thing is highly defamatory. And when I look at the media release that went out at the time, I'm of the opinion that somebody within the... Oh, by the way, we analyzed the documentation. So the summary of the alleged criminal offenses prepared and released to journalists by Mantengo Mining, including Mellor and Naidu, we found that that summary from the metadata of the document, we were able to see that the summary had been prepared by a chap by the name of Maharaj, who works for a law firm called Dev Maharaj. And then we find that Dev Maharaj has a family trust and they own shares in Mantengo Mining. So we come to the conclusion that somebody needs to be asking the question, is this alleged share price manipulation and alleged criminal conduct by various parties, is it in fact an attempt to pump the share price upwards by Mantengo Mining shareholders? Because that's certainly the way it looks. And I'm not certain, but I've seen this type of conduct before in Africa involving public companies, either involved in the JSE or in Sydney or London on AIM, and I see what I classic simple symptoms of what I call a pump and dump operation. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if somewhere along the way, somebody who's the current shareholder of Mantengo, other than Ulrich Bester, McGowan isn't a shareholder in Urs Motti, but somebody somewhere along the way is cashing in on this, and somebody needs to put Miller and the other people in Mantengo, like Naidu, they all need to be put under investigation to establish why they have done this, and they've been at it for almost a year now.
So there's also a 250 million rand defamation suit that is being... Has it been launched? Is it just been threatened? What's the status of that?
I have no knowledge of that. I've heard that mentioned, but I have no knowledge of it. There's so much going on. To be frank with you, if you're going to be conducting yourself in a way that you draw attention to yourself in the way that Mike Miller and his colleagues at Mantengo have done, I mean, it's a fact of life that if you look at the directors of Mantengo, some of them do have some fairly big clouds hanging over their heads. And if I was a substantial shareholder, which I'm not, thank God, I would be calling for a change of the board of Mantengo Mining and for the institution of proper ethics in Mantengo Mining, because it seems to me that the share price is not as valuable as they claim it would be. I've looked at the share charts, the movements. And if you look at the movements, the trajectory is downwards. There's no upward trajectory at any point in time, except for when Mantengo itself is alleging share price manipulation. And then you see an upward swing for a few days, and then it continues with its downward trajectory. So I'm pretty sure if there is any share price manipulation, it's coming from within Mantengo.
Wheels within wheels. Paul O'Sullivan is a certified fraud examiner and the head of Paul O'Sullivan Associates. I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.